It's been a few years now. In fact, it's been over a decade. But I'll never forget going to court with a friend who was awaiting sentencing on assault charges. We were sitting in Judge Sullivan's courtroom in Hackensack Superior Court. I remember thinking this judge, who had been a former Episcopal priest before becoming a Superior Court judge, was handing out sentences the way King Solomon did, which would be with wisdom. If you remember King Solomon, he had two women who came before him claiming each to be the mother of a specific child. And so what Solomon did in order to find out who really the mother was, to test maternity, if you will, was to say, all right, since I can't discern between the two of you who the real mother is, I'll just have to cut the baby in two and give half to each of you. And at once the birth mother heard this, she immediately gave up her rights to her son so he could live, and Solomon knew exactly who the real mother was at that point. And upon seeing this, Solomon awarded the child to the woman who spared the boy's life. Well, I can tell you that King Solomon had nothing over Judge Sullivan. He behaved just like the king in today's parable. And for 5 hours, I watched as he dispensed just the right measure of justice and mercy in every case that came before him that day. Now, unless you've sat in a court, a criminal court, for any length of time, it's really hard to appreciate just how sweet mercy is when it's given and how stark justice is when it is received. It is an amazing thing to not have control over your future, which is what happens in a criminal court. You, as the defendant, no longer have control over your future. A jury does, or a judge does, but you don't. And I'll never forget the emotion in the courthouse when Judge Sullivan sentenced this 18-year-old boy to a 4-year state prison term for failing to break his heroin addiction. At first, it sounded just outrageous, 4 years in state penitentiary for failing to kick a drug habit. And you see the reaction on the kid's face as the police officers come up from behind him as he's standing at the defense table and tell him to put his hands behind his back, and they put cuffs on him. It's a sobering, sobering sight. And to hear his mother and his sister crying, wailing in the courthouse was like having the fear of the Lord put inside of you. I'm telling you, that phrase comes alive in a situation like that. Even the prosecutors and the probation officers were silenced by this sentence. No one expected the judge to give this kid any time. This judge had just given a kid who had never been in prison a day in his life, a kid who had never hurt anybody other than himself, a 4-year state prison sentence. Wow. But the judge also did something else. He made sure that this kid's lawyer, and this kid's family understood that he would release this young man from prison the moment he was accepted into a 12 to 18 month drug rehab program. And in offering this mercy, or forgiveness, if you will, he said, "You're a young man, and you still have a chance to build a life for yourself. So this isn't about the law. It's about saving your life. And the only way that I know to do this, the only means at my disposal, is to put you in a place where you will be forced to kick your habit." In short, this judge was telling this kid and all of those who were supposed to be there helping him to get their acts together and to get this kid into treatment, something, it should be pointed out, they could have done before appearing in his courtroom. They had all the time in the world. What I've come to believe is there is a lot of conflict and suffering among people that could be wiped out, literally erased, if each one of us would simply do the simple thing, which is honestly and deeply accept responsibility for who we are, for our actions and our humanness. Think about all the times that we've gotten into meaningless arguments or into trouble just because we could not stand to look at the painful truth about ourselves that somebody else was reflecting back to us. There really is no earth-shattering news here in this scripture reading. It's called the human condition. It's called the nature of sin. And every one of us is affected by it. Most of us live in a world of me and mine. Most of us have to make a very special effort to work at being thoughtful of others, especially strangers. at being good listeners when somebody else is wanting to share something about their life with us, at being really honest about who we really are, and spiritually disciplined with our own behaviors so that we're on guard more to catch ourselves than somebody else. It's a rare person who truly does this. So when Peter asks Jesus, "How many times, Lord, must I forgive my neighbor who has wronged me?" he's asking a legal question, which is something most of us tend to do. Tell me what I have to do to satisfy God. Tell me what I have to do to satisfy the court. Tell me what I have to do to satisfy my family. Tell me what I have to do. But as in most cases with most legal questions that come before Jesus, he deals with it by telling Peter in a very witty way, "I don't tell you 7 times, Peter." No. "I tell you 7 times 70. Forgive your neighbor until you don't have to. Forgive your neighbor until you forget the number that you've forgiven him." But what if you're in an abusive relationship, right? A lot of women hear this text and they take it as a sign that they're supposed to stay in a relationship where they're being hurt. Are you supposed to forgive the person that's beating you 7 times 70? The answer is no, you're not. This is not what Jesus is talking about. He's not telling us to be doormats when somebody's abusing us, verbally or emotionally or physically. He's not saying just stand there and take it and take it and take it and forgive and forgive and forgive, even though the behavior never changes. Last week's sermon on confronting the disruptive person in the community is tied into this week's sermon, you see. Jesus' teaching on forgiveness can also be abused, just like going and talking to somebody that's hurt you can be abused. Forgiveness does not mean embracing violence. Doesn't mean embracing anything that goes. In our context, forgiveness is a gift of grace. It's something that's given as a reflection of who God is and what God's nature is, not the curse of further violence and abuse. So here, the call to forgive is 7 times 70 as a counterbalance to the way we are instructed to confront one another, as discussed last week. So that if you go 3 times to your neighbor and still don't find resolution, is that all you have to do and you can wash your hands of it? No, it would seem not, because Peter's question follows upon that story and Jesus tells him 7 times 70. So Jesus is clearly advocating an attitude here of forgiveness, but not one that embraces violence. You see, confrontation without forgiveness does not offer good news to anybody. And neither does offering forgiveness that pretends confrontation is unnecessary. If you forgive somebody and there's no change, what good has been done? Both justice and mercy are needed. They can't be separate. This is a case of forgiving the sinner but not the sin. "I forgive you, but I do not forgive the violence that you perpetrated against me." For the relationship, therefore, to continue, the violence must stop. And even if the relationship does not continue, even if I can't stay with you, my heart will be in a state of forgiveness, at least. My heart will not be in a state of fear any longer. It will not be in a state of anger or resentment. That's why I forgive, so that my heart will be at peace, not so that you can get away with more violence against me. I forgive you so that I can get on with my life. So Jesus tells this parable of the unforgiving servant and the unforgiving master, and the forgiving master, to kind of counterbalance what we have a tendency to do, which is go to one extreme or the other. When one person breaks the trust, you see, in an intimate relationship, there's a debt that is created. They now owe the other person some kind of payment to make amends and to show remorse or to compensate for the damage that has been done to the relationship. Something has to be done. It's the nature of justice. But then as now, that is not always possible. It's not always possible to make amends for everything that we've done. Sometimes the debt is beyond anything that can be paid back. You know, how do you pay back a life that you've taken, for example, if it's a murder that we're talking about? Then as now, the only solution, the only means to restore the relationship was through mercy for the debt to be forgiven. But notice, it's not the behavior that is forgiven. It's not the fact that you did this to me, or I did that, or you did, or I did that to you, that is forgiven. It's not even the person here who is forgiven per se. It is the debt owed that is forgiven. It is what I cannot possibly repay you back that is forgiven. Forgiveness is not a get out of jail free card. Forgiveness makes judgments. Forgiveness actually stands for right behavior and right relationships. Otherwise, there would be no necessity to forgive. And since this is the case, forgiveness, therefore, does not stand for everything that happens. But it's not something that can be legally quantified either, as is in the case of our parable. How many times do I have to do this? Or in the case of Judge Sullivan, for that matter. It's something that comes from outside of us. What Jesus is calling us to do is give up calculating who owes what to whom. Stop the calculations. I mean, if you were to look at Congress, for example, one of the big problems we've now fallen into is the same problem that's occurring in the Middle East, the inability to forget and forgive. We are constantly going back and forth, blaming each other, and this Congress, I've been reading, has done nothing. In the history of all of the Congresses that have sat in power, this is the worst Congress. You can see what's happening in our country when forgiveness does not occur, when mercy is not shown. You have to work at developing a heart of forgiveness, which is to say you have to shift your attitude. You got to get your mind right, to quote from Cool Hand Luke. All right? It's not a shift that says anything goes. It's a shift that says, no, man, it's time to grow up. When our underlying belief is that we are to be perfect, or that my position is the only position that is right, even if it is a subconscious thought, then any threat to that perfection or position becomes a matter of perceived life or death. I've got to defend it at all costs. You, therefore, cannot be my friend. You are automatically my enemy. That's what we've broken down to in this society. But when you accept that you are a sinner, when you accept that you have no more right to sit in judgment than the person that you can't stand sit in judgment of you, then you begin to see that we're far from perfect. And what happens is we can lower the stakes, and forgiveness then becomes possible. But that's only if we acknowledge our own weakness and humanness. That doesn't happen if we think we're right all the time. We know this to be true. Intellectually, you know this to be true. But it's another thing to live it, isn't it? It's another thing to live this way. But we live so much as if we're supposed to be right and perfect, if that's the most important thing, as if the world will end if anybody were to find out that we're not right, that I made a mistake, I'm sorry, I need to change my position, I need to change what I thought. What a waste of time, what a waste of energy, what a waste of money. Wouldn't life be a lot easier, and wouldn't it be far more productive if we all just fessed up that the emperor has no clothes on? And we're all the very things we would like to deny. We're all those things that we hate in somebody else. You know, when the spirit is not embraced, it leads to the kind of hypocrisy that we heard about in today's text, where the man who was forgiven a debt that would have been incalculable, unable to ever forgive it because he couldn't possibly repay it to the king, couldn't possibly forgive this other servant a day's wage. It just boggles the mind, but it shows you how long this has been a problem. The human condition has never changed. We're not getting better. We're not more perfect today than we were 2,000 years ago. Sin still abounds. It seems so obvious, but which one of us hasn't held a grudge? Which one of us hasn't held a resentment toward another person at some point in our lives? We all have. We do it too easily, and that's why Jesus tells Peter he must forgive 7 times 70. Look, Peter, the question itself shows me that you don't get it. And as he teaches us to pray, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors, in equal proportion, equal sign there. That's what it means, as in Greek. Equal. It reminds me of a poster I recently saw. Lord, may my words be sweet and tender, for tomorrow I may have to eat them. Our capacity to see ourselves honestly makes forgiveness possible. But our pretensions to perfection makes forgiveness absolutely necessary. Amen.